Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
does my heart good after all these years. Going on 11 years, once you hear that music, you know somebody's ass is in trouble. good evening, and welcome as we get ready to get down with another Hump Day special, courtesy of everybody here at Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it's good to be in the house with you. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Brother Man Network. If you want the who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how and stuff, you got to come right now to www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to all the members of the Brother Man Network who may or may not show up as things carry on tonight. But we want to make sure we carry on by recognizing one member in particular, and that's my older brother, Gary Norris Gray. Gary has been doing a show since, I believe, 2001, and this will be the last year that the code will be in any kind of fashion or form as a entertainment venue. And I want to say, first of all, Gary, I'm very proud of you that you went on here and did this on your own. No help from nobody else. You diligently put the information out there, and you've been right far more times than you've been wrong. And so I just want to say, job well done, brother.
Thank you, brother. I help all you brothers up there, and I gotta thank Roy Rogers. I would not be without Roy Rogers. All the things Roy Rogers do.
Oh yes, no question. I also want to recognize our other brother, the member of the Nick Line, Tony McQueen, the editor-in-chief emeritus. What's up, T?
Mr. Rogers, your appointment is set for 9 o'clock on Thursday for your COVID shot. Please be prompt, and please be prompt, and at least show up 5 minutes early before the appointment.
I heard that. Now, I know in this business, we've heard every type of interview there has been. And the ones I hate, I won't say hate, but dislike, are the ones where they're trying to fill time and say, what do you need to do, you know, and stuff like that. I've heard dozens of these. And one time I was pleasantly surprised. That was this Sunday, and the sideline reporter went to Mr. Geno Smith and asked him how he felt. And fortunately, Geno told her. He said, basically, I'm happy as a pig in shit. My team won. Come on, Detroit. He did everything that I guess the interviewee was not supposed to do. And ironically, it all came out. Detroit won. Green Bay lost. Seattle's in the playoffs, and Geno has the last laugh on all of us, because I remember how they trashed him when he came out in the draft.
And then you think of Detroit, look, the NFL, the more I get into it, the more I do I like it. Now we know Aaron Rodgers is going to retire. Tom Brady gonna retire. They're trying to find the next hero.
Well, they're trying to find a white hero for sure. No question about that.
Although I will say this, I believe it when I see it with both Giselle's ex-husband and Serpico. I believe it when I see it, because this plays out like Titanic, 3 hours all 3.5 hours, and we all know the boat's going to sink. It's just a matter of when.
You know, bring on the water.
Well, also, Tampa Bay, play Dallas, okay? Lord knows, Dallas Cowboys once again.
Yeah.
So, hey, put on Monday night. You know why I put on Monday night, right?
Yep.
See, the NFL can say anything one day. But we know their game. And they don't want the young men to win. They don't want Dak Prescott to win.
No, they don't.
They can't stand Patrick Mahomes. What are we missing here?
Well, you're not missing anything. You know, you can't have your heroes and eat it too. And we know they like the heroes like they like their milk white. But having said that, let me get back to why this Geno Smith thing is important. I remember Geno Smith coming out of school in West Virginia. I believe he was the quarterback after that white was a bad mamma jamma. But he wanted to play baseball. His coach was a racist. And other politics got in the way of it. So he never got a chance to get off. Actually, Damon Allen, my man up in Canada, told me that Pat White was the guy who most reminded himself of him. And Damon was a bad manager. Now, having said that, Geno, of course, didn't get drafted on draft day. Got picked up the next day, first round. Or second round, you should say. The Jets treated him to a mediocre lifestyle. And he bounced around here and there. Ended up in Seattle. And ironically, outplayed everybody to keep the job, maintain the job, and get to the playoffs. Now, Pete Carroll's not my favorite person or favorite coach. He's an asshole, as far as I'm concerned. And Geno made it work with him. I would think that Geno's going to be comeback player of the year because he had been written off. And you know, as a black quarterback, they had written him off already before shit got started. However, Geno stuck to his nose, kept it to the grindstone. That sometimes had Seattle scoring lots of points, sometimes grinding stuff out. But the bottom line was Seattle made it to the playoffs because Detroit had to beat Green Bay, which they did with an amazing performance by their safety, who literally outplayed Aaron Rodgers in a game of cat and mouse. But what do you say when somebody we think is going to get buried, rises above and survives and then thrives?
What's not funny, in a more ironic funny than anything else. This is what happens when one, you try to bury somebody in a sense, but also it's, you know, he basically played their game, in a sense.
Yeah.
He kept plugging away. He kept, you know, he never stopped believing in himself. The thing is, the guy has talent. I think that's your biggest thing. Yeah, inconsistency at that. But see, the thing is, it's literally one of those, hard work and perseverance wills out. It doesn't happen that much, especially for black quarterbacks. They have to go through some mess to do that. The thing is, the whole thing with the Jets was crazy because it's funny. I was reading, I saw something online where they were talking about the behind-the-scenes story with Andrew Luck and how he's, about his early, during his career, how in a sense he wasn't as humble, he was more humble. And see, it's funny. Early in his rookie year, he was talking to one of his offensive linemen, and he said, "How do I make the transition?" And he basically said, "You have to come in thinking that you're God's gift to football." And that's the thing. Every good, mediocre, or dead roach white quarterback is told from day one. Why they get 150 different there's a reason why Chase Daniels is still getting an NFL paycheck. There's a reason why they keep hemming and hawing about Zach Wilson. But the thing is, with most black quarterbacks, they're not allowed to, in a sense, keep hanging on. They basically get one or two shots, and then that's it. Sometimes you don't even get the second shot. And sometimes you get sabotaged in that first shot. You realize that the Bears are actually thinking about drafting a quarterback and getting rid of Justin Fields. Now, here's the crazy paradox with that. If he were to go somewhere else with weapons, he's probably in the
playoffs. There's no question about it.
He's probably in the playoffs.
I've got the professor with me, Fred Whitty. And first of all, Happy New Year, if it's not too late, Professor. And secondly, we already know a black quarterback either has to be super Negro, but he can't just be Negro. And Geno Smith was just Negro for a while. Now, back in the old days of the draft, we all deduced that for all of us who followed it, a guy had 3 years to get it right. Hey, Geno, it took him 5 years, but he's on it. And he's probably got a secure job now. But no one was ever going to say, "Hey, Geno Smith is a top 10 quarterback." So what say you, and good evening.
Good evening. Happy New Year. Welcome to all the liberals and on the East Coast, and as well as the West. I hope Gary's not out there playing in the water. I've seen some video, and I got a nephew that's out there somewhere ducking and dodging the moving swamp called California.
Yeah,
having said that, Geno is just one, the young man that played, who helped turn the tide for the Carolina Panthers. Same difference. The only good thing that happened was that, eventually he kept the Panthers afloat, because I think he was something like 3-1 before he was replaced the quarterback. And that dead fish that they got sent out to California somewhere, that was there. But, we like to use the term being fair and all that kind of stuff. But as we well know, ain't nothing, when it comes to us at certain positions, ain't nothing fair about it. If a talented quarterback has a better chance of making it if he would, quote, become a tight end, or he becomes a wide receiver, and in some cases, a running back.
True.
Back during the Earl Campbell days, the blocking back, the best blocking back that Earl Campbell had played quarterback at Alabama A&M, throwing to an All-American who became All-Pro, who also became Hall of Famer, John Stallworth.
Yep.
Okay. Moving forward, only the persons have changed. The rules ain't. In today's environment, what do you have? You still have all these white boys who are ordained and destined to be quarterbacks because that's what they play. But at the same time, where they may have played well at the collegiate level, and sometimes even that's suspect, because they look at what they can do and then make up stuff they can't, or ignore what they can't do. And then you bring it forward to several guys who should be in the Hall of Fame who would never make it, but Warren Moon is a good example. He's there.
Well,
but look at his path to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Now he was never not good. He was never not great. But he was also never not anything but a black quarterback. And because of that, he was always viewed in a certain way. There's this thing that white folks got that they have to be the alpha dog. You see these guys come out of college who can quote as a collegiate playing sometimes to so-so, if not mediocre, talent at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They can make all the throws there. What is it that prevents them from making all the throws at the professional level?
I agree.
Well, you got assholes in the booth who would say, well, he was a little bit off. He was also running towards the sideline, threw him back across his body. And what did he do? He threw back across his body.
Yeah.
And what did he do? He hit the guy in full stride. Now, this moron drops the ball.
I'm sorry, but ain't it ironic Pat Mahomes can throw across his body and throw from all kind of odd angles, hit the receivers, and they think it's such a special talent. But you better believe
it's even worse than that. You remember early in the season, there was at least two throws he made that were borderline underhanded because his hand was below his head, was below his ear, and he still mm-hmm. threaded the needle between the two guys that was on the line, as well as over a guy down range, maybe 5 or 10 yards in the linebacker spot, over the head into this cat, and he did what was necessary at the moment. And they end up scoring. Well, the talking heads dissected the throw and what was wrong with it. He scored. that clown that you all loved so much back in the fall, that they got traded to Carolina Panthers, who eventually shipped him along with several other people away. And isn't there a certain irony? Dumbo leaves North Carolina. I think he went to California to the Rams or somebody. His backup, correction, who's the guy who should have been the number three practice quarterback?
Yep.
The black guy who I think he went to school at West Virginia. Wherever he went to school, don't matter. He saved their ass. He went 3-1, didn't get benched, and lose this other white guy who didn't play
Walker went to Temple.
Walker turned the ship around. And realistically, he turned the ship around and over because they were sinking fast.
Yeah.
And then take the ironies a couple of steps further. Okay, Walker was no good, was only good because the guy knew him from his coaching days in the collegiate level. But the guy who gets $40 million to go away, $40 million to go away, mm-hmm. Turns up with a college coaching job at Nebraska of all places. And then he gets another chance, but will Mr. Walker get another chance?
Now, Tony, Mr. Jones,
go down the whole list of black quarterbacks, see if they get another chance.
Fred brings up a great point. Here Walker bailed out Carolina and got them back into the swing of things. And now they're swung out, and Walker's not going to get any run this at all. How many front offices are paying attention to this? And how many analysts, the so-called experts, are paying attention to this?
Well, there'll be unfortunately not as much. And you know, not to mention, you know, the head coach who got them to go 6-6 so they could, you know, I mean, they, you know, as silly as it was, they damn near won the division. They were still up for the division title up until the last week of the season. But it's the ridiculous double standard that you just get tired of. That's, you know, I have to admit, I watched that, you know, I have to watch the NFL in bite-sized portions. I mean, I watch it enough to know, you know, I can't completely shun the games, but you know, I watch it. I put this way. Thank God. Thank God for the mute button. The mute button is still, you know, the hell with the dog. Man's best friend is the mute button, as far as I'm concerned. If you're a sports fan,
you're better than me because I usually go to sleep on Sunday afternoon.
Because of the business I'm in, you gotta at least watch the game. See that's the thing. You still have to watch the games. You know, if you allow yourself to be dictated to by these folks and their narratives, you know, because see, let's put it this way: if you say watch the first week of the season, you know, took a Rip Van Winkle like sleep leading up to week 17, week 18, you would look out and say, what? Seattle in the playoffs? What?
No,
wasn't
shit.
Baker Mayfield in Carolina? You know, I mean, there's all sorts of things. But see, that's the thing. It's all, you know, the NFL, what's so crazy with the NFL, and I guess it's like that with all sports, but it seems like with the NFL even more so, it's all about narratives. You know, we always talk about how going into the season, basically, the season is written out in folks' eyes. There's usually like, say, 5 to 10 narratives about the league that's supposed to be absolutes. And then when they don't plan out, you know, there's something wrong. The league is not as good and all this other.
Yeah.
You know, it's always going to be, you know, the narratives become excuses after a while.
And we have to consider, no matter what happens, Gary was right. When that young man had the defibrillator put on his ass, we thought it was lights out. But the brother was dead.
Yep.
And if he had died, that would say the premonition come full circle, and not for nothing, Gary would have major Negro dominance points on both ends because he said it would be just as bad in college as it would be in pro. The only thing that turned out to be a saving grace was. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but as soon as they got his ass carted off the field, there were no gambling commercials or anything else. And it was like, well, don't we have our priorities in a row here? And frankly, Kevin Hart's a coon. I can't stand him. And when he used to do these damn overdog commercials and all this other shit, it's like, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to see this. Shut the fuck up. And I was so glad that they were off the air. Now, it looks like Hamlin will make a full recovery and it's business back as usual. Just in time for the playoff money to start coming in. And all together, it was just a matter of, do you really think the cash is going to stop? because somebody died? Well,
no, unfortunately,
we don't have to find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, can I just speak on one other thing too here, Mike, that I think only a handful of people have been talking about in regard with Hamblin? And you know, I try not to get too, you know, biblical or whatever, but
that's God.
That was nothing but God with him, you know, with his recovery. You know, for him to be able to walk out of there after a week and everything. But that being said, and also, I don't know if folks are real, the Bills are going to pay him his full salary for the entire season.
You better believe it,
it also brings up another thing in regard to the NFL. Now, it's great that he's made the recovery. It is tremendous that, you know, it's sad that he had to be on the brink of death to whatever. But that being said, if he can't play anymore, and there is still that possibility, and I know the mental part is probably going to be more of a transition than the physical. But that being said, if he does not play another down in the NFL, for you to have to be, you know, this will be his second year in the NFL.
Yep.
That's right.
And for you to be able to get a pension, you have to play, I believe,
three years.
You have to be on the roster for 3 years.
Yeah. Now, if he does not play another game, and look, we all know how, you know, the NFL, you know, did what they had to do. And to be honest with you, it wasn't even the NFL. From what I've heard, it was the NFLPA led by both coaches of both the Bills and the Bengals coaches. They were not going to go back out there and business as usual. But that being said, are they going, you know, while they're going to prop him up and whatever, I'm sure, you know, Hamblin will be seen on the sidelines or be at the Bills home game. They're gonna use him as a prop now, in a sense.
Of course.
During the playoffs and what have you. But are they really going to take care of this kid? Are they gonna basically say, you know what, we understand what happened, if you don't play again, we will give you a pension, or will they business as usual?
It can happen, because if you think back just a few years, the young man Connors from Pittsburgh, they kept him on the team payroll for three or four years.
Yeah,
because Brian Shazier, right?
Right, Shazier. He never played again after he got hurt. A few teams will do that, but the key word is few, because most of the teams cut their losses. You know, you've had guys get cut and bought back just so they didn't have to pay bonus money.
That's right.
And I'm not talking about Joe Slav, I'm talking about some of these cats were star players. With the salary cap, you can move from your team to another team, and they can pay you five times what your team can pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And that reflects against the salary cap. And see, that salary cap is a blessing on one hand, but it's a curse on the other. And a lot of times, And the curse comes through louder and clearer than the blessing, because how many guys do we know about, you know, they talk, well, they're broke now. Well, they left the team with a bum knee.
That's right.
The Vegas Raiders are grabbing a damn bullet. The Vegas Raiders. Goes in there. You know why? Because the car got injured and paying $3.5 million again.
That's right.
So in order to get by this little problem, he
And he said the fuck in.
As I checked, when they did this regular chance for playoffs, they didn't care. They did not care.
We forget just how much money is in effect. Now, forget about packages and cable issues and other stuff like that, being able to download. The NFL is fat. I mean, they are loaded. And it seems like almost every other day they were making up a different way for a revenue stream to come into existence where the NFL could profit. When Hamlin got hurt, his shop steward had to be around to keep track of what was going to go down because it was no different than capping it or the situation we saw in the NCAAs, where a kid from Louisville got hurt. It's a workman's comp situation. And sports will never be connected with unions until a union situation rears its ugly head. And Mr. Where's Waldo, the invisible man, made sure that the NFL did not end up with egg on its face after what happened in Hamlin.
Yeah. It's tremendous that he was able to recover from this. But how are they really going to treat him when this is done? And I think that's something that we all need to, not so much worry about, but we need to keep an eye on that, because right now they're just going to ride the wave of the story, but I would not be surprised if within a year or so, if it comes out that he's not going to play again, we can only hope that like Fred said that Buffalo will at least take care of him if the league doesn't.
Right. Well, T-Mac, something to consider here is that I forget the last figure I heard about that money that had come into his foundation, but from that aspect of it, I don't know if he's finished school or what, but he may be in pretty good shape anyway.
Yeah.
Because,
it's good PR. The toys, the foundation, the foundation was almost $8 million.
Almost eight?
Oh,
I know at one point it was 5+.
Yeah.
And having coached at upper and lower levels, I mean, I saw a girl get knocked cold on the volleyball court on a spike.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've ever been on a NFL sideline, You won't be as surprised about certain aspects of that as some people were. Fortunately,
right,
there were people there who recognized what was going on,
mm-hmm.
which you may or may not have it below the Division I level. But at a D1 level, as well as a professional level, you have doctors and surgeons of all types down there on the sideline. So,
sure.
I wasn't watching the game. I heard about somebody calling, giving me the, did you see that? What is happening? No, what are you talking about? And they explained to me. And then when I start watching the replays on the 10 o'clock news, I wasn't surprised because I've seen the medical teams, if your eye falls out, they got somebody there to put it back in because they have at least 3 or 4 certified doctors right there to cover.
You're right about that.
Especially orthopedics, and especially now. And see, most the average person doesn't know. every stadium that professionals play in are required to have x-ray equipment. They have defibrillators. They have all that kind of stuff. My church has three defibrillators. So it's not surprising that that's there, because it's not that. I think certain aspects of it, there was a bigger deal made of it than really necessary. But at the same time, though, I am glad that this young man was, you know, when they pulled him off that stretcher, that was when I saw, well, this is really serious, because sure. This, you know, this was a Earl Campbell getting hit by torpedo from the Steelers.
Yep.
And see, the thing that got me was, it didn't look like that hard of a hit. It was more or less a placement.
That's exactly what happened in here too.
Well, the body reacted. It hurt him, but he stood up.
But it was the nature of the hit, whether the physics problem where he got hit at a rate of 32 feet per second squared at 2.6 seconds, you know, it doesn't matter. The bottom line was the hit happened. It's probably not the first time, too. I'm not just talking about this game. There's been others who've been hit like that and didn't get hit exactly to that point where, oh, all right, they have perfection and boom, this guy's out. We have to be careful. This is a collision sport. Collisions happen. So we're not going to be taking out the fact that we can't imagine somebody dying. Somebody almost did. And the relief that everybody from Park Avenue to Phoenix has shown is that, damn, I'm glad he didn't die, because there's too much money to make. It wasn't because this poor guy, you know, one less human being gone. They're not going to stop playing the game the way it's been played. And the next time there's a hit, nobody will say nothing. It may be a bit more subdued, but they know folks are going to get hit. And what's going to happen when you get hit is really what's the issue.
Well, you know, again, I'm more than happy this young man has pulled through so far. And, you know, and when it comes to Buffalo, what they've gone through in the last year as a city, you wonder, okay, what's next? Because between the snowstorm, you know, my sister, who used to live in this place called North Tonawanda, New York, which is northeast of Buffalo.
I heard of it. Yes.
And it's another one of the places you go out the back door a few hundred feet, you're in Canada.
Yep.
And we were talking about the snow there. And, you know, the funny thing was that it was snowing at one point from one direction. The wind changed and the snow started coming off the lake, the lake effect snow. It actually cleared up and the sun came out. But
that's right.
Because the Lake Erie and all that other water up that way, they started having lake effect snow, which was grittier than the stuff that was coming off that was coming down from the sky.
Yes, it was.
And as it piled up, it just, because for those who don't know, Orchard Park is not in Buffalo. It's down the road a ways. And all that area got swamped, but then it was coming off the lakes and all around. But, you know, when we pull back and just say, okay, what happened here, and admit, you know, when you pay for a ticket to go to a ball game, we talk about the guys who make the six, seven, eight figures to play.
Yep.
But there's a lot, you know, and this is why I tell parents, get your, you know, you want your child to go to the NFL, You want your child to go to the NBA, let them learn the business of football, let them know the business of basketball, the business of baseball, because when you know the business, you can go to those leagues, stay 20 or more years, and never break a sweat on the field or on the court. You know, the young lady that ran track, one of the mothers that was running track for the last Olympics, Allison Felix. You know, there's somebody who truly learned the business of track and field. So even when she lost her contract, she came back, did her due in other ways to bring more money in and prosper. And what do you have? She made money in spite of the fact that the people who she had a contract with basically screw you. And, you know, when she started talking about having a child.
You're right.
And see, that's what happens when you know the business of your sport. You're not just some coonhead out there. To his credit, no matter what you may think about him, and some things are good that I think about him, some things aren't. But Deion Sanders is another. He learned how to master the culture. He learned how to master the business environment better than most people, because there's nothing scares me worse when it comes to listening to a professional athlete, and he knows nothing but go talk to my agent, and then when you talk to his agent barely know who he is.
You're right about that. I would be remiss if I did not ask the professor about Franco, about the incident, and about his untimely passing. Fred, first, how did you feel when you got hit with all that?
It hit hard. I was in the middle of something else when I heard about it. But, Franco, and see, again, we're getting back to culture. Do you realize how close those guys who played in the 70s still are to this day?
Yeah.
You know, talking to Blunt at one of his son's games up at Central, he's rattling them off the name of some of these guys' grandchildren, like they're his.
Yep.
And Franco was, I think a lot of people took Franco the wrong way, because he never came out hardcore black or hardcore white, because he was both.
Right.
At the same time, though, part of what he did and part of who he was made him viable in both environments. He was probably one of the most charitable people ever to play for the Steelers and most other NFL and some NBA and professional baseball team. He, they literally, during the season, he would go out, a time when you would expect to be at the house resting. He would go out and speak to kids. He was a soft touch when it came to doing charities and charitable work.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they had to get on his case a few times. They're like, man, you need to slow down, do that in the off season. But I always put it this way. I put most of the guys that played for the Steelers during that era, I always put the guys who came from HBCUs out front, but right behind them, I would include the likes of Harris. Even as crazy as he pretends to be, that whole group that came along with Terry Bradshaw and that group, that's the last group of players that I can think of who started in the early 70s, played throughout the decade, and actually were still strong going into the 80s. Because most of those guys stayed together until 82, 83 when they started retiring their masks.
Now, that's true. I was talking to Tony, as we normally do on Mondays when we kick it. And it turns out this particular Monday that the movie Draft Day was on. Now, the movie was okay. It did give us some pause to talk about other stuff, especially how front officers were able to maintain. Now, in the movie, the storyline had to do with the fact that a first-round draft pick commanded three picks. And I asked Tony, has there ever been anybody who demanded three picks? We know about the Ricky Williams nonsense with New Orleans and the great Ollie Mattson, which once commanded 11 players being traded. But has there ever been a situation where three players went in the first round? Tony.
Well, from what I keep, I've been following up on that, and from what I can see, there've been some close instances where you've had two first and a very high second, but
yes.
I have yet to see three in the first round. It's funny because there was one team between the late between the early 70s and the late 80s where it happened like about 8 or 9 times in a 15-year span. And that happened, and it just happened to be the Baltimore/Indianapolis Colts.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was uncanny. Now, it's happened with a bunch of teams. You know, it's happened with the Steelers, of course. It's happened with the Bears. I think the most famous one with the Bears was, of course, Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers in 65. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we've seen, you know, I didn't get a chance to go through every team, but the thing with the Colts really struck me because, you know, after they won their Super Bowl in 71, you know, the Colts really sort of hit rock bottom. And then, you know, you had the miracle season of 77 for them where they went from worst to first and And that's where a lot of their consecutive first-round picks came. But the only reason why they weren't able to really do much was because a certain team in Pittsburgh, PA. It seemed like every year they were always playing them in the first round of the playoff, and they could never they could never really get by them. But it's very interesting as we, you know, we're still a good ways away from the draft. But I know – just in talking, like we were saying before, to me, this is a good time to start prepping mentally for the draft. You know, now the bowl games are over. I guess you're seeing a lot of all-star games played over the next few weeks as well. So you'll get a chance to see some of these guys. And again, it just shows you that the thing that I really enjoyed in looking at it was how you didn't have the pretentiousness that you have with the draft now. You know, you didn't have the draft gurus and everything like that. It was just, you know, let's get, you know, literally, figuratively get the best available. And, you know, a lot is made, you know, the NFL Network has a show called Pass of the Draft where they look back at us, you know, types, you know, different drafts. A lot of it is sort of modern, but the farthest back they go is that 74 Steeler draft with, you know, of course, Swan, Lambert, John Stallworth, and others. But we were looking back at the Franco draft, the year that Franco got drafted. And, you had a bunch of 70s mainstays get drafted in that 72 draft along with Franco. Guys like Gary Mullen, of course, Jefferson Street Joe, John Cole, Mike Webster. Mike Webster was later in that 74 draft, but Mike Wagner and other, I mean, the the building blocks of that 70s that 70s
both
dynasty
yeah.
were made in the 72, the 71 draft, and then of course the 74 draft. Within the next year, they've got that first Super Bowl, and of course, you know, the rest is history.
Yep.
Well, T-Mac, look at something else that is often overlooked. Starting with the steel curtain, you realize only one of them went to a major college?
Yeah. And now Ernie Holmes was in that 72 draft, and I believe LC was in that.
LC and Joe Green came out together.
Yeah,
LC was one of the last guys drafted.
15th round pick.
Right,
15th round pick in '69.
And still not in the Hall of Fame.
And remember, North Texas State at the time was an NAIA school, just like Arkansas Pine Bluff.
That's right. They were one double A.
Exactly.
Also, along that same line, you had Mad Dog was the only one that went to a quote-unquote major college.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, even if you go over as far back as John and, what's the 76's name? Anyway, even to the white guys that were part of the regular players, and the steel curtain, most of them came from small colleges. Jack Lambert came from the great Kent State.
Yep.
He was undersized in the works, but at the same time, what did he do? One of the best all-time best at linebacker. And looking at the linebackers, he was the star, and then you had one guy from Penn State.
Jack Ham.
And the rest of them, Jack Ham, Dirk Winston was the only one that was from a major school. He was from that powerhouse Arkansas.
Yep, and Andy Russell.
Who during that time probably would have struggled with Arkansas Pine Bluff had they played each other.
Yep.
And go to the defensive backfield, most of those guys were from NAIA schools. Because at the time, South Carolina State had just moved into was just getting ready to move into Division One, what we would call now 1AA. But at the time, they were Division Two.
True.
Same thing with Southern University. I mean, they were in the SWAC, but still, they were Division Two. They were Division Two school. So
right.
You know, we won't get into who was better. The one from USC or the one from Alabama A&M, because think about it. Just like when you hear Joe Green talk about how good he was, but how good LC Greenwood helped him become. Look at those two guys on each position, and you find out what they made each other. They were great on their own, but they made each other better. See,
right.
That's what's not that kind of thing is not factored into the equation when you look at who's good, who's better, and you know, because like I was asked the other day, you know, my top five. I said I don't do that because if it's basketball, where you got five fingers on each hand, you can put a guy from that era, those eras back in the day. And not even mention any of these clowns that they have, some clowns they have now, because they played a different game, and they made all the moves that made easy for these guys to do what they do now. Because nobody really plays defense, so you know, they have almost eliminated the post player. So it's a different kind of game, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
I still hold to the fact that, and not just because they're the Steelers, but there were other teams during that era who were just about as good, and they drew from the same pool that the Steelers drew from, to include HBCUs.
Yeah, I agree. Gary, I would ask you, the AFL was playing catch-up for a while until Pittsburgh became, you know, the Steel Curtain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But really, I think by the early 70s, the AFL had done a better overall job of finding talent than the NFL.
That's correct. The and Oakland Raiders had seven or eight HBCU players.
Right.
And when they won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. That was
76. And the media tried to downplay those seven players.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't do it.
No, no question. So if we look at what the Las Vegas Raiders are doing now, do you think that they've forgotten what has made them great and try to fall into a formula that has become a toxic one because it's not going to work?
What happened to Las Vegas is they lost their soul. What I mean is this. The Oakland Raiders mean tough football. Oakland Raiders mean football. Right? The Oakland Raiders play defense. You don't see anybody in Raiders uniform play defense now, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the heart and soul of the Raiders. I'm ashamed to even say the word Raiders now because of the way they play now.
It doesn't sound like it's going to affect future fans, but I got a vibe that a lot of fans are going to drop off because it's not the Oakland Raiders. And when I'm talking about going down memory lane, we're just talking about the style of play.
That's correct. If you took a video of the old Oakland Raiders and played against the new Oakland Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders,
mm-hmm.
it's like night and day. What I mean is this, you have people, safeties, free safeties, corners, that do not play a man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I play wheelchair football, right? I play corner, wheelchair football, right? My man did not go by me. Okay. I get in front of me. These guys don't do it. And I go right by the coaching. What are the coaches doing? Where are they at? Because if you're a defensive coach, you're supposed to try to play. You can't do this.
When the kid from Buffalo got hurt, thinking to yourself, oh my God, I can't watch football anymore because
yes.
I think this kid's going to die.
Yes, I felt very sick when I saw the faces of those players, when I saw those eyes of the players, I said, oh, this is serious. And I could not watch football that weekend. Because I
didn't go watch it. Well, you know, having coached as well as static games, I've actually seen some of all kind of injuries.
Uh-huh.
I can't say any ever took me to that point where you say, well, I don't want to watch football. But there have been times when I didn't. When certain things happen, I may turn away. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, because think about it. just a few years ago, there was an incident at Winston-Salem State where one of their players got his neck broke in practice. And thanks to the trainers and so forth who stopped practice and took care of the situation, that young man has come back. I think he came back and played 1 year. But he was the same young man who suffered a broken neck, let's say in September. In late October, he was back. And we had a game against Virginia Union where one of their players got his neck broken. And the next morning when he woke up in his room, guess who was sitting in the room with him?
Yeah.
The young man on the opposing team. And, for all the criticism we keep on our millennials, you know, there's some really good people out there among them too. It's just that we have to tell our own story, because when you look at the fact that here's a young man who went across town to sit and be there when an opposing player, you know, came out of his medically induced coma.
Yep.
And was there, you know, to comfort him and it really just basically, hey, don't worry, you're gonna be fine. Mm-hmm. And these guys are still friends to this day. But you know, I've watched a lot of games, and I suggest, you know, you don't know how bad certain players were hurt. Because I always tell people this, when you look at the fact that Earl Campbell seldom finishes a Steeler game because they hit him that much and that hard. And when the torpedo hit him, he early in the second quarter, he did not play anymore. He went on the field for two or three plays, but he barely played anymore that whole game. And that happened several times. And, you know, you get the guys like Riggins and a few others who bulldoze guys. You know, you get all kinds of stuff that can happen. It's just a matter of does it.
Well, the episode with Washington, D.C., when Lawrence Taylor broke quarterback's leg. That episode made me ill. It made me ill because they get replayed over and over again. Why do you want to replay? I mean, when you saw it once, what are you doing?
Well, you know there's a double-edged to it. There's a fear factor in that, in making people see this, just like people watch auto racing for the accidents and stuff like that. But there's also something else that bothers and excites people at the same time, and that's the element of danger. You know, God forbid somebody come to the point of death.
Mike, you know, one of the things that kind of irked me, you know, back and forth over the years is everybody said, well, you know, John Madden and his effect. He was always about boom, 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 knock him out, knock him out, knock him out. And remember, for several years, the league was built around this jargon, smash mouth football.
Yep,
that's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
And when players started smashing mouths, what happened? Oh, they're such savages.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing I listened to, I was watching a game a few days ago with the guy that coached that coached the first team that the Kansas City went to the Super Bowl. You know, his his whole vernacular, the crux of his vernacular was one smash mouth football, but he made the players sound like a bunch of animals.
Yep.
And eventually cleaned some of that up, but at the same time, it was a lot of it was still there, and unfortunately, you know, certain things you can kind of weed out in practice, but it's all too often that some referees call certain plays a certain way, and then they'll go back, you know. Something to call them, they're not the proper consistency. Sometimes players don't know what to do.
Yep. That's true. And if you
can in reality, if you really look at each play, you can go over every single play you want to do. Right?
Yeah, you could.
Every play.
Scary part is to get trick bagged into a game where the referees do not have control of it. And that's the worst nightmare because one or two bad calls can ruin a game where there can be technical excellence going on in the pits. Everybody's playing hard. So you give everybody a little license, but then the referee will look at something. It's like what they did to Cam Newton years ago. It's like, you don't earn that call. What do you mean I don't earn that call? The guy beat the shit out of me. Well, when you're older, it's like telling a kid about putting a hand on the stove. When you're older, you'll know better. You know, are you kidding me? It ruins the notion that it's a real sport and that it's a fair sport. The more we see this, the more we realize, well, if you really want to get on the soapbox and say, yeah, this ain't fair and there's some big dastardly shit going on, there's some truth behind it.
What have I told you all before? If I was going to fix games, I'd pay off referees. You can't trust players, and
yep.
Two, most calls that referees make are subjective. How do I feel about this situation on this time and this particular day? That it's very subjective.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, was it Sunday night that they had the guy thrown out and ejected from the game for pushing the guy from the opposing team's medical staff?
Right. I remember that.
I understood the flag to a degree. I understood the flag. I didn't understand the ejection. And see, that made no sense whatsoever.
Well,
now the flag in itself was borderline at best,
but
the player
control the player.
Yeah, but Gary, when you add a control with the kind of money that's being thrown around, you got to wonder just how much control really there is. I mean, you can bet. Now, let's remember this. It wasn't that long ago you couldn't bet. You had no career because you bet on a game. Or, you know, you didn't get a chance to get anything done because somebody found out in your history that you bet on a game, and you got froze out. You were never able to play because somebody thought that you'd take a dive, literally, football style. So now, ain't no worries on that. next month, you got the XFL, and you got the USFL. So you got football all year long, literally. And the XFL made no bones about how they followed the over and under, the point spread. They announced it during their game. So it's like, what do? You got to call it like it is. And with football playing all year long, I got to wonder, will there be anyone who will ever get really sick and tired and say, enough? Man, I don't do football no more.
It could go to that because the USFL, XFL, the NFL, because you have all year long, right?
And the CFL will be playing too by June.
The CFL, okay. Now you're a married man, right? And your wife says, come on, dear, you gotta go out to dinner. And you're saying, I'll go watch this game. Now you got a problem. Because your wife wants you to go out and you want to watch this game.
That ain't happening.
Okay.
Gary, I wouldn't walk down that street. Leave it alone.
How about that?
I think that you have divorce is over and baby all year round football. Because you have to pay attention to your family.
You know, Gary, you bring up a good point because during the Super Bowl, we've seen over the years people who got killed.
That's
either
right.
Watching the game or not watching the game or whatever the hell. Now, you put this into the mix, and it does give you a what-if type situation laid out. And I think Fred's right. You don't want to go down that road.
I think it's very dangerous. I think the one of these entities are going to have to go. Because we can't have
them
all year long.
Well, it
remains. See, the secret there, Mike, is this. You know how they say to train up a child? You train your wife. You know, there's certain, okay, you take her to a football game. You get her interested in one team or the other. You know, I look around my church, there's one of our fun things that we do as a church is one of the things that we greet you, okay, who's your team? Who's your football team? Who's your basketball team? Okay.
Right.
We have those wives who go, football, you know, I want to watch a movie, blah, 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 you know, all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, we have some divided houses because this past Sunday, one of our deacons and his wife, they were kind of walking on the opposite side of the aisle, so to speak, because he's Dallas, she's Washington.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand him, but he still loves her. But you know, we got a number of couples, all Cowboys, all Carolina Panthers. We got two couples that I know of that are Steelers fans. You know, and you know, you have to do it in a way that makes them blend together. And see, in a lot of cases, men have, you know, some women have never learned how to watch, thus don't know how to like football.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sit around and explain it to them, I mean, even my ex has started liking it. And she was going to, she liked my son's, okay. Football is an excuse for the band to play. And we got her far beyond that. And those kind of things, it comes down to that whole heading of good communication. Most times they don't like it, like certain things, because hey, true. We don't know nothing about.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Gentlemen, I have enjoyed this. We prepared to go for at least an hour. We're doing an interrupted version of this because affairs of state take precedence over affairs of state. So let's get the final thoughts in this abbreviated version. Fred, go right on ahead.
Well, I'm glad that we're finally back. I have a lot of stored up conservatism that I miss because I would have loved to have had the opportunity to split hairs with you all over the likes of Mr. Herschel Walker.
Oh,
there was a
yeah.
lot of good
there
was a lot of good jokes there that we could have laughed a whole lot there. Except for the fact that, you know, we've been crying because, hey, here we are with this black man who is so convoluted and deluded and delusional.
You know, the way
and all
we'll
the other
stuff
that
we're the way we'll think
just, that. So, you know, we got a lot of good things going on now, so we just might as well go ahead. You know, and keep it going. I'm happy to be back with this. I tried to get in last week, but I'm on my third phone in the last 2 years. So
yeah.
I was trying to, and I had to depend on one Mr. Reggie, and he gave me the wrong number. But I'll get even with him later. But everything is going good. I spent most of the day arguing with today and yesterday arguing with this tech team. They were trying to reset my computer and get it going the way it's supposed to go. But we're up and running now, so
right.
We'll be back. One of my, you know, but we'll be moving forward. I'll be on next week, teasing them again, but she didn't.
Ooh. www.blackheritagereviewbooks.com.
And also on Facebook.
Yes, indeed. By all means, put some black history on your nightstand, at the kitchen table, in the library, in the reading room, wherever it need be, any place is a good place for black history. Gary, sound off, please.
Well, this weekend, the National Football League will be the first round of the playoffs. Once again, half of the field will be led by brother quarterback, or as Michael would say, field generals.
Yes.
The media has yet to respond to half of the field being black quarterbacks. And they won't. They won't do it. I hope that the Kansas City Chiefs, Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, Miami Dolphins, Baltimore Ravens, all win their game this weekend. Then what are you going to do? Ask a big question. Also, part two, I'd like to say congratulations to Naomi Osaka, as she will become a mother in 9 months. So congratulations to Naomi Osaka in her new adventure, a new life. Being a mother of a little one.
There you go.
Straight up a cold. 1 o'clock. This Saturday, we'll be talking football and the political ramifications of the injury in Buffalo.
Indeed. Good good looking out, Gene. I want to end this like I started. Geno Smith will never be a Hall of Famer, but he's a damn good quarterback. He stuck through whatever politics were there and worked himself out. He survived Seattle, and he survived the coach that probably did not like him to where his team was winning, and he was getting results done positively on the field. He should be the comeback player of the year, and we are proud of him. We say, bravo, Geno. Do it again next year, but, of course, don't do it against my Philadelphia Eagles. Now, we'll see you next Wednesday with a little longer show. Until then, everybody, go safe, be safe, and remember.
I'm sorry about the inconvenience.
Thanks,
sir.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Thank
you, sir.
Thank you.
Kiss my entire ass.